Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode features John Fetterman, Lieutenant Governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. This episode was recorded over the phone on April 26th, 2021.
John Fetterman, Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania, one of the states currently looking to legalize adult use cannabis. You recently had a engagement with the head of Normal for a particular area out in Pennsylvania, as well as the CEO for Leafly, Yoko Miyashita. What brought about that event, and what was the messaging you were trying to get across?
Sure. Well, I think what brought it out was, quite frankly, is that I've become like a prominent national advocate for legal weed and have been doing so in Pennsylvania as Lieutenant Governor, but also as a first-time candidate 5 years ago, was the only candidate running for that office that was called for legal weed. So it's been a message of consistency, and that it's a plant, and it's an enormously powerful public policy lever that all you have to do to pull is say yes to a plant, and the rest kind of takes care of itself. And we are not a first mover. There are plenty of states where you can observe best practices from. You can calibrate, you know, what that ultimately looks like. And you know, we in Pennsylvania are going to fall behind more so with New York legalizing it, New Jersey legalizing it, Virginia legalizing it. Delaware, I believe, also is so it's simply something that the messaging has just been, why are we arguing over this? I mean, that I don't know how to make it any cleaner than that.
Is there a particular market that you are looking at to hopefully emulate?
I would say I've been a big fan and admirer of Illinois' approach. My colleague, my counterpart there, I think is, you know, really, it's really, we don't have their legislature, quite frankly. So our law will probably not be as ideal as I would describe it, theirs. But I'm for the bill that could get passed, quite frankly. Is it my dream bill? No, would it be anyone's specific dream bill? But I think the most important thing in Pennsylvania is that we get it legal first, and then we can, of course, work it and perfect it. Because it's important that we stop charging and arresting over 20,000 residents every year for stupid weed charges and convictions. And we need the revenue, we need the jobs, we need the freedom. I mean, it's just, I don't want it to become a beauty contest of, well, this isn't the perfect bill, so let's wait another 5 years. I mean, like, I think it really comes down to acknowledging the reality that 70% of our state wants this. New Jersey has it. New York has it. Half our residents are a half an hour drive or less from a whole candy land of legal weed. And I think Pennsylvania, whether you support it or not, anyone can tell you we're going to be awash in legal weed. It just won't be ours. And why would we want all of the externalities that comes with without all of the massive benefits that it brings to our treasury, to our residents, to our criminal justice system, et cetera?
Well, and what's the key right now to getting PA legalized? Because it seemed to me—
Yeah, it starts with an R and ends with an S, you know, and that is Republicans. And that's really it. Thankfully, we have one Senate co-sponsor, a legalization Senator Dan Lochlin out of Erie, and there'll be more. And that's the critical first step, but that's the obstacle. That's the only obstacle. If we had a mechanism that allowed a constitutional amendment or a ballot initiative, let's say, it would pass easily. I would say 65% or higher. And but that's not permitted in Pennsylvania. So the only way this can happen is legislatively. And Republicans control the House and the Senate here in Harrisburg. So that's what's jamming that process up.
Well, and I do want to bring up that, you know, Pennsylvania was one of the original states that was the source for Operation Pipe Dreams, obviously Iowa being the other state. I'm curious, you know, being somebody that grew up in the state, somebody that's intimate with the residents and the culture of Pennsylvania, how has the industry evolved in Pennsylvania since, you know, say 2003?
Well, I mean, our medical program is going to pass $1 billion in sales this year. I mean, that's a remarkable statistic. And that's around 300,000 users. So, I mean, that's a base as large as the city of Pittsburgh. I mean, it's huge. And this is just, a couple of short years, one of which was a pandemic. So if our medical program is that robust and large already, can you imagine what our recreational market would look like? Can you imagine the revenue that we would bring, the jobs, the cash crop, you name it. Yeah. We processed 20,200 arrests for cannabis in Pennsylvania last year. In other words, every 5 years, we fill Beaver Stadium in Penn State with stupid weed charges. I mean, think about that. Beaver Stadium is one of the largest stadiums in the country, and we fill it every 5 years with stupid weed charges that would stick with a person's record until they get a pardon, which, we've developed a program for that. But what would really work is just legislative expungement, which would accompany legalization.
Now, you had mentioned before that you are a fan of CBD gummies.
Very much so.
Being somebody that doesn't consume THC yourself, what was the impetus that kind of led you to try CBD for the first time, and how's it working out for you?
I just heard and it was available, and my immediate was relief and delight that this substance is available to me now. But then it was anger that stupid prohibition kept this product from me for my entire life, like without good reason. How many people are out there getting in car accidents or getting stoned on CBD gummies or any of these things, just all this ridiculous reefer madness nonsense, and we've had this awful epidemic of opioids and self-medication. And, for me, CBD has been a godsend, and it's something that I've come to incorporate into, my own personal wellness. And the fact that nothing other than this weird superstition kept that from me my entire life, it's an outrage, and it doesn't make any sense. And we've had legal CBD now for 2 years, and the world hasn't spun off its axis, and we haven't devolved into chaos and anarchy because I can rub some CBD on my bad knees, or it's just perfectly emblematic of the whole reefer madness mentality.
Well, and when you're talking about the 2018 Farm Bill and you're looking at the proliferation of CBD throughout the markets, I'm curious, one of the most recent developments from the 2018 Farm Bill has been the proliferation of things like Delta 8, Delta 10. Have you heard about these products, and have you tried Delta 8?
I have, yeah. And once again, they've existed, they exist, and I haven't seen our country run off the rails or anything weird happen. I mean, it's just this idea that these kind of things and these kind of products need this, I'm very libertarian that way, where it's just what are we doing here? What are we doing? It's perfectly legal to buy a bottle of Jack Daniels every day and drink yourself to death, but someone's worried about somebody sucking on a THC gummy or somebody sipping a little weed, sitting around their fire pit after work, taking the edge off. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. In Pennsylvania, you can go to a Sheetz or a Wawa and get a carton of Marlboro and smoke that. You can drive to a state casino and gamble away your life savings and your retirement and your kids' college education. You can stop by our state liquor store and buy a jug of grain alcohol and get obliterated. And you can even buy lottery tickets with a talking groundhog, that as a spokesperson, and it's all legal. And it's we celebrate that in Pennsylvania, but sip a little weed and you're going to have a criminal record for the rest of your life. Grow a couple weed plants. Like, for example, Arizona, you can have a dozen of them in your home, perfectly legal. In Pennsylvania, that's a felony, and you may even do some jail time for that. It's absurd.
It's sad. I mean, especially when you consider that the fastest growing demographic in cannabis is 55 plus, for the medical reasons. And you had mentioned, Pennsylvania's growing medical market. When you're looking at the future of medical marijuana versus, recreational cannabis, there has been some concern that recreational cannabis would kind of overshadow the medical market. You being somebody who's currently using CBD for pain relief, are you somebody that also kind of shares that concern? How would you help?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. It's medicine. It's medicine. And this idea that people are going to abandon it, it's ridiculous. Like, it just doesn't ring true. I mean, if anything, it speaks to the wonderful versatility of cannabis. Is that it can have a very specific, and again, everybody assumes that people just love getting stoned or whatever. And it's like, no, that's not the case. A lot of people use cannabis because it helps with their medical condition. Mm-hmm. And why on earth would they change that if they're getting relief? Now, what I hope it would do, if we enact especially home grow, that patients could grow their own medicine. I fully support that. And it would also drive, I mean, the only main criticism we get about our medical program, and it's valid, is that it's too expensive, right? You know? And once the price comes down, why would you turn your back on medicine? It's this reefer madness superstition that all of us just secretly want to get stoned all day and whatever, any more than, you know, like I want to, you know, go run out and buy a bottle of vodka after I'm done speaking with you. It treats us like children or people that can't be trusted to manage their own wellness and well-being. So it doesn't make any sense to me, and it doesn't ring true. If I use a specific strain for my PTSD or whatever, why would I deviate from that if it's working for me? Just because, let's say, legal weed. Now, if I can get cheaper legal weed that does what it needs it to do, maybe, but these things, at least in Pennsylvania, are very precisely engineered, and these are very specific strains.
So. Yeah, and that's one of the fears here in California. I was going to mention that was the taxation. So, for instance, here in California, you know, you might have a $50 eighth, but by the time you have finished purchasing that eighth, it comes out to be $75 or so, and that's even for medical patients who get a slight break if they've registered with the state. Is there a hope maybe that if a recreational law does pass, that maybe taxation will be lighter on the medical side? I mean, that's something that we hope for here in California.
That's the genius of all the states that have gone before us. We can practice best practices and find out what structure works. You know, is it too high? Is it too low? Black market? I mean, California has the whole Humboldt County problem, but it's like Pennsylvania doesn't necessarily have that quite. But your point is a valid one. It's like, what is the optimal level of taxation that balances suppressing or eliminating the black market with revenue and access to pure product, you know, and the social cost of maintaining impure marijuana in our system and in our state? So that's, again, I would say, let's ask, fill in the blank, all these great states.
Well, when you're looking at federal legalization, currently we have a democratically controlled White House. We have a democratically controlled Senate and Congress. Joe Biden hasn't always been the best with cannabis. Kamala Harris has kind of switched her position on cannabis since being the AG here in California. Are you hopeful for federal legalization? I know Chuck Schumer has said—
I'm not.
No?
I'm not hopeful for it. Certainly not anytime before 22. I think I'm the only elected official that has maintained that. Well, I said this publicly on Twitter back in September. I said, whichever candidate embraces legalizing weed is going to be the next president. And I'm glad Donald Trump didn't listen to me, because if he had, he would have won a second term. So, you know, look how popular he was in Arizona compared to legal weed, which passed overwhelmingly. And it's just like, it's an enormously popular bipartisan issue. And I don't understand why we as a party are to the right of South Dakota on that. You know, South Dakota, arguably perhaps the most conservative state in our union, or one of them, certainly the top three, voted to legalize weed by 10 points, by a 10-point margin, voted for legal weed. What the hell are we doing as a Democratic Party? You know, the base of our electoral college pyramid, you know, our states that are legal weed, California, Oregon, Washington, New Mexico, New Jersey, New York, you know, all these states make up the essence of our base of support in the electoral college. And yet our party and our senators are like, I don't know, reefer madness. And well, the science isn't in yet, even though, you know, of course, cannabis has been around for how many thousands of years. So it's just this idea, and I'm not optimistic. And that's one of the reasons why I keep hitting it so hard is that while I'm very supportive and have been very delighted at President Biden's first 100 days or so or whatever, but it is an area that is such a powerful piece of low-hanging fruit that would really activate a segment of our economy that would be most beneficial to a country that really needs that, quite frankly.
Well, and when you're looking at, you know, Chuck Schumer's announcement, were you surprised that he made that announcement considering?
No, he's got a primary and, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just like 5 years ago, that was like, are you crazy? You know, and I know because I was the only one saying it, you know? So, like, I mean, now I guess it polls better than it did in 2016, but I was right then and I'm right now. And, there was just an article just recently in Politico where Shaheen and Simons, well, there was one or two other, there was at least two senators, maybe even three, even though Bob Casey, whom I love me some Bob Casey. He's a great senator. He's a true credit to our Commonwealth, but he seemed even unsure of it, or at least on the fence. So we don't even have our own caucus in line. So I'm not optimistic, quite frankly. So, and I don't understand that. I genuinely don't.
Well, and you're looking for a 22 Senate bid. I'm curious, what's the impetus to jump for the Senate versus, say, the governorship of Pennsylvania? You seem kind of primed for the position as a hometown hero.
Yeah. Well, I look at it this way. It just came, you know, really became clear during the January 6th uprising, and my unintended or accidental, you know, face and defender of Pennsylvania's electoral integrity too, during the country, during the election, where it just seems like, you know, I wanted that to be that voice of, I mean, people say nice things about what I said and did during the election, and I'm very grateful for that. But I say I didn't do anything other than what I'm doing with you right now. I just sat in this chair in front of my laptop and told the truth. And I do that whether it's talking about our electoral integrity or legal weed or whatever it is all I can do is just tell the truth about that. And it's the fit that made the most sense, I think, at the time. And, you know what you're going to get with me. You know, my campaign released a video on 420 where it had me talking on 420 of 2016 and talking and 420 of 2021, and I'm saying the exact same thing, and it hasn't changed, and it won't change, because the message is one that this country just needs to get behind it. Canada did it, Mexico's going to do it. Like, I mean, like, what are we waiting for, you know?
Right, and for you in particular, when you're looking at, you know, the things that are currently going through the Senate, obviously, the House being a little bit more progressive, the House has passed the Safe Banking Act four times now. It's now going to the Senate. Not a lot of hope that it's going to pass because it needs a supermajority. Are you hopeful that if legalization does not pass at the federal level, that at least something will pass that will help alleviate something like maybe eliminating 280E?
Of course. I mean, like right now, weed is categorized as a Schedule I. Like, I mean, that is, it's offensive. It's offensive, you know? And, you know, you talk to any veteran that is struggling with their well-being, you know, or their trauma or PTSD, they tell me that they need weed, you know? And the government treats them like a criminal, or, you know, would turn their back on them. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know? Like, how is there not the political will to you know, deschedule it at least, you know? Right. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
What's the most confusing for me is how does Washington, D.C. have it legalized? And yet none of the people.
With all due respect, Washington, D.C. is a very progressive city.
Yeah.
South Dakota voted for it. Like, that to me is just like Montana. John Tester, which again is bizarre, but his own state voted for it. But so we don't even have our own caucus together, you know? So I don't know, you know, so it just comes down to, it's baffling to me. And I don't use THC. I don't plan to use THC. And there's nothing, but there's nothing wrong if any adult 21 or over should use it responsibly. You know, like, how can I clutch my pearls if somebody wants to get, you know, high after work and be like, oh, cool, you have a couple martinis, you know? Like, I mean, like, it just, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, during the pandemic, our legislature passed a bill allowing drive up drinkable cocktails, you know? Yeah. And I'm for that, that's fine. But you can literally roll up to a restaurant and buy a margarita the size of a bucket of paint and that's ready to drink, no problem. But if you get caught sipping a little weed, you know, that you got a criminal record. I mean, it's just so silly.
Well, and another piece of legislation that I do want to ask about is the Preventing Online Sales of U.S. Cigarettes to Children Act, which is kind of currently attacking the vaporization industry. Have you heard of this act, which is currently banning, you know, the shipments of vaporizers and stuff like that through all the USPS?
I haven't. I know, like, my wife, for example, is a medical marijuana patient here in Pennsylvania. She uses a vaporizer, a vapor pen. So I think it's like we don't want to give into the hysteria of that either. I mean, we don't want an epidemic of youth and teenagers doing, you know, vapor and you know, flavored and things of that nature any more than when I was a kid, you know, having Joe Camel and incentivizing young people to smoke as well too. I'm very much a libertarian in that sense. The adults have the right to do these things on their own in the privacy of their own home, as long as it's not to the detriment of anyone else's health, safety, or welfare. You know, like it should be legal.
Well, and since your wife is a medical cannabis patient who uses vapor pens, during Vaporgate 2019, where the illicit market had additives to some THC cards.
Yeah, to your point, all of that was, you know, you don't buy your stuff from like some, you know, like rundown gas station along the side of the high. I mean, that's what it is. And that to me is another argument for legalization and full on regulation. It's like that will, you know, it's like nobody wants bathtub gin, but that's what we had during Prohibition. And we don't need these garbage products with these garbage additives where there's no accountability. That's why legalization brings the sunshine in, the sunlight in, and you have a purity and regulation revolution that eliminates all of that, you know, vapor gate or whatever you want to call, where it was suddenly like everywhere when, you know, it's like, consumers need to be discerning on what substances they put in their body. You know, it's just a fact. But legislators need to be accountable to say, we need to create a framework that allows these things to be manufactured and sold in a very safe, pure, and regulated manner as well too.
Well, and do you think that, education was partially a problem there? Because, you know, you see a lot of the states that didn't have any type of medical or recreational program, their politicians were kind of using that as an excuse as to why they shouldn't have it.
They'll use anything. But the thing is, no one believes them. Everyone knows it's reefer madness. You know,
right.
It's like, I'll never forget after I finished my 67 county tour. And I said, 65 to 70% of Pennsylvanians want it. And they said, they said I was crazy to do it in the first place. And then they said, I'm a liar. And now they stopped saying that. And now they say, well, we have more important things to talk about. And then New Jersey did it, New York did it. And now they just don't say anything at all because, you know, they know. And it's just like, there's no shortage of fringe publications and weird stuff on the internet. You can find, you know, like type in anti-marijuana article. I mean, you can find anything you want to maintain a reefer madness perspective. But the truth of the matter is, and I can't emphasize this enough, reefer madness is the true fringe viewpoint in the American public. And that's probably 15% of Americans that think it's the devil's tobacco or our nation's, you know, in a hell in a handbasket kind of a thing. That's the true fringe belief and outlook. And that's what I just keep reminding people of that, because
Well, I was going to say, but education has kind of shifted since then. Do you feel like there's finally a windfall?
Education, it's not even education anymore. It's acceptance. Everybody wants it. Everyone's right. Cool with it, you know? And also, once it happens, the people that are on the fence are going to be like, shit, this is what I was worried about? Like, I saw that with a lot of, you said earlier, and it's true, the average 55 and older, you know, these folks go to the dispensaries in Pennsylvania, and they're like, this looks like an Apple store for weed. Like, it's not some skeezy head shop, or my grandma uses medical marijuana or whatever. And it's just like, hey, this is pretty great. Hey, this is pretty nice. So that's the education. If anything changes the hearts and minds, it sure did in Pennsylvania. Medical marijuana was very contentious and controversial in Pennsylvania, but now everyone loves it, except that it costs too much, you know? And that is the education that you referenced, me or anyone else going out there. It's just the fact that people can experience it and see it with their own eyes. And then they're like, this is what I was worried about, this, you know? And it's just like, then suddenly it's like, my God, why are we arguing about this? You know, some of my most ardent supporters of legal weed are people in their 60s and 70s or medical patients where they're like, I'm so embarrassed at the way I used to look at marijuana 20 years ago, because now my quality of life has been indelibly changed for the better.
Well, and if you're looking at the current situation that Pennsylvania is in, obviously you guys are kind of surrounded now by recreational cannabis. Yeah. Have you and Tom kind of talked with the leaders of, say, the tri-state area yeah. on trying to figure out, you know, how you can kind of segue Pennsylvania sure. into a... Yeah, how's that conversation gone with, say, New York?
Well, the governor and I went to a weed symposium in New York before the pandemic hit. Governor Cuomo and all the other regional governors were there. And unfortunately, it's looking like Pennsylvania will be the last one in that consortium. And it's inevitable. I implore my colleagues, look, prohibition is so much more work than just admitting that you've evolved on legal weed and it's time to do this, you know? And it's like the good news is you get to decide how to spend $100 million of free money every year on things to make Pennsylvania better. You know, like what a problem to have, you know, right. What a problem to have. Gee, how do I want to spend, you know, $300 million a year in revenue, you know, to make Pennsylvania or my district better, as opposed to handing it over to the cartels or the drug dealers and things of that nature, you know? So, but 22 and the calculus makes it very difficult, because I'm sure many would perceive that as a political win for me, or it might be too risky to push this in a Senate or whatever for 22. So I'm not optimistic at a federal level for it, which, you know, I participated in an article like, hey, is this the last 420? And I'm like, no. Unfortunately, we're going to have to need another 420 when it's not legal. I don't see that happening before the next 420 for those reasons that I explained.
Well, and I know I only have you for a couple more minutes. If you had one particular message that you wanted to get out there, I know that you're saying legalize, 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 but if you had one particular message to the constituents or the people of, you know, states that you don't represent, what is the best way that people can get active in, say, their communities to help bring forth legalization efforts?
Well, I mean, this legalization in their own states where it's not legal, mm-hmm. I just advocate, talk to your legislators, like demand this. Like, we want this. Like, I tell people, like, look, if you've got a Republican rep or state senator, you know, like, politely, respectfully, you know, pound them. And you're like, we need this. Don't hit them in the face with a wet rag or call them names. No, we want to do it in a constructive, respectful way. But it's like, they know it's going to come, and they know their constituents want to need this. In fact, I bet you some of them even do it themselves. You know, it's just time to get over it. And just advocacy is the best way to get it going, you know, and constructive interaction and outreach to me is very powerful in that regard. And that's, I mean, I went to the Keystone Cannabis Festival 2 weekends ago, and 20,000 or more, I've never seen traffic like this in my life, in a cornfield in one of the reddest counties in Pennsylvania, an ocean of people. all want this, you know? You know, Red County, Pennsylvania, I've never seen traffic like this anywhere. You know, it was like a it was like the Rolling Stones reunited for one night only or whatever. I mean, I've never seen traffic like this. And this is Berks County, Pennsylvania, one of the reddest counties in Pennsylvania. And I've never seen miles of cars lined up just to get in there. And there was already tens of thousands of people in there. So Pennsylvania is ready for this. And it's about reaching a critical mass where the Republicans just stop and say, you know what? This doesn't make any more sense politically. Let's just get it done with and we can move on and be better for it.
Awesome. Well, I definitely love Pennsylvania. I can't wait for the day when I can actually come out and smoke legal cannabis in your state. Lieutenant Governor. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I would share that sentiment, even though I probably wouldn't be partaking, but you or any other adult should have the right to do that safely without fear of criminal record or impurities that hamper our black market. So it really comes down to, legal weed in Pennsylvania. And I know I'm right. It's just a matter of how long the Republican led leaders say, you know what, let's just do this. And that's where we keep pushing. And if I'm elected to the United States Senate, you know, you will have a unabashed cannabis advocate for all the right reasons. It's just such a powerful lever to pull on so many different levels.
You're one of the best politicians I know. I'm definitely a huge fan of yours. It was an incredible pleasure to be able to talk to you again. John Fetterman, Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania. Keep fighting the good fight, sir.
Thank you for having me on. And yes, thank you very much.
We would like to thank John for his time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about his work in Pennsylvania, as well as his bid for the Senate, at www.johnfetterman.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.